and welcome to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wilczynski. So today we'll just talk about all the drama regarding the FTX collapse. FTX was the second biggest cryptocurrency exchange. I've been getting a lot of people asking me what exactly happened. Other Bitcoin sites, how they will be impacted by this event. So we will try to explain what happened and what the potential impact of this event is on Bitcoin and what lessons we can learn from it. We've joined by a guest who helped us explain that. So we'll get right into it. This show is brought to you by hardblock.com.au. We an Australian exchange and we make buying Bitcoin dollar cost averaging really easy. You can set up recurring automated payments that go into your Hardblock account and then right to your hardware wallet. So you can have it essentially going from your bank account to your hardware wallet, hands-free. Set and forget. If you haven't, give us a shot. Anyway, we'll go right to the show. Okay, hi, how are you, Yao? Thanks for joining us. It's been very exciting past few days.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for inviting me here, Daniel. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. So how have you been stuck to Twitter and the news the last few days, or you've been managing to get to be a little bit productive also?
It's quite mind-boggling because I trade Bitcoin too, but the exchange I use I don't think it's likely going to be affected. So I'm still worried about the situation. Because as things unfold on the FTX event, more and more companies within the industry got affected. For example, some Australian exchanges have stopped withdrawing. Today in the morning, we saw that one of Genesis Trading also stopped withdrawing. That's a huge trading company in the whole ecosystem. So I think many things and many other creditors who were involved in the crisis will gradually be revealed when things unfold, right? So it's still good to stay vigilant and keep an eye on what's going on Twitter.
Yeah, right. And that's a good point because things are still evolving very rapidly. So for anybody listening, right now when we're recording this, it's the 17th of November, 2022. It's Thursday. So really this, if I will use explicit language, shit hit the fan last week on Tuesday. That's when I woke up and I heard that FTX is going to be bought up by Binance. That's when really things started, like the publicly. So that was last week. But yeah, things are still evolving. There will be effects, contagion effects, what's going to happen, we don't know, but we'll try and explain the situation for the listeners up to now, what's happening and what will happen. And Yao, he's pretty knowledgeable, he's been in Bitcoin for a long time, and he's an engineer. He worked for a big Bitcoin exchange in the past, so he knows the ins and outs of exchanges, and he's also a trader, so he's experienced. He's just over experienced with Bitcoin, and he's been following the situation, so he'll help me to explain it. Yao is originally from China, but he lives now in Australia in Adelaide. But that's my brief intro. So maybe you can explain to the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what's your background.
Okay, so I started to learn about Bitcoin when it was 2014, and I bought my first Bitcoin in 2015. That's when I was working as a engineering director in a non-Bitcoin company. So we worked on normal applications, business applications. And in 2016, I joined Bitcoin China, mostly known as BTCC, where that was the third largest, when it was the third largest exchange and also one of the largest mining pools in the world. So I had the opportunity to work with Bobby Lee, the founder, and also Samson Mao, Bitcoin Maxi. So I worked there until China starts to ban Bitcoin. So then, because I have been studying abroad in Japan when I was in college, so you know, I also speak Japanese. So naturally, I went to Japan and worked mainly worked for SBI. SBI is one of the one of Japanese financial conglomerates. It has a bank, it has a stock exchange, it's a major stock broker dealer, and it has lots of investments into the cryptocurrency industry. For example, it has SBI owns partially owns Ripple, you know, shitcoin, and lots of small cryptocurrency companies, including wallets, including technologies related, you know, in the whole ecosystem. So when I was at SBI, I worked as blockchain advisor. So mainly did lots of researchers, blockchain researchers, and also sometimes, you know, they get me involved into some of the portfolio companies they manage. Yeah, that's you know, basically my working experiences in SBI. Then now I'm in Adelaide. I moved from Japan to Adelaide and decided to take a little break. Yeah, that's how it is.
Okay, yeah. Well, Adelaide's a great place to take a break. The best city in Australia, if I may say so. Very relaxed, but still big enough that you have everything you need. I thought that actually BTC China at one point in 2016, I thought it was the biggest exchange by volume.
That's correct, because Bitcoin, the founder of Bitcoin China is a Bitcoin maximalist, and Bobby Lee is a big Bitcoin maximalist. And by the end of 2016, Ethereum was emerging. So there has been a huge debate whether we list Ethereum or not, and we list all the shitcoins on Ethereum or not. But before that, there has been also debate about, you know, whether to list Litecoin. You know, even though Charlie Lee is Bobby's brother, and so on and so forth. So I think there is a fleeting moment for around like three to 4 months where we were overtaken by OKCoin by the end of 2016, because they quickly decided to list Ethereum and other shitcoins so that the volume got overtaken. But still, BTCC was huge by then and is operating one of the largest mining businesses too.
Okay, well, that's over interesting. I'd love to know more, and maybe we can discuss in a future podcast more about your time in BTC China, because it is like a part of history. I think that's like a whole different podcast episode. So maybe we'll get on to the topic for the listeners, explaining the current events. So give us a background. What is actually FTX? What is our FTX? What's Almada? What's happening? People are confused. They hear all these stories. What happened?
So FTX is one of the emerging largest crypto exchanges as of a week ago, I guess. Because it has already, at the moment we speak right now, it has already filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So it's no longer Liquid, and then it's no longer accepting new customers. Alameda Research, along with FTX, was founded by SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried. This person is an ex Wall Street trading firm employee who got getting into crypto in 2020, in 2019. There has been a lot of expertise he brought from Wall Street trading firm Jane Street. There's a company called Jane Street that's a hedge fund on Jane Street trading firm. So he brought lots of his friends from that company, and also his friends from MIT to form this this Bitcoin cryptocurrency exchange called FTX. And along with that, there's a prop house. There's a prop firm that does the trading and some of the market making for some of the Ledger Liquid tokens that's called Alameda Research. And by the time we speak, the former CEO of Alameda Research is Caroline. She's also from Jane. She used to work at Jane Street too. So SBF and Caroline used to be colleagues, and according to some sources in the news, they used to date each other. So that's how that company is. And FTX grew from zero to it's operated from initially like 20 person to around 300 person in 2 years, and it's a superstar. It exploded basically. Lots of people from not knowing FTX, and it grew into a huge empire of around a financial group with like around 136 companies under subsidies.
So yeah. it started in 2018, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So that's crazy. From 2018, and at its height last year, it was worth around $20 or $30 billion.
That's right.
So in 4 years, it went from zero to a huge company. But yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, so I had a friend in Taiwan at the end of 2019. There has been a huge conference. It's called Asia Bitcoin Summit. It's called ABS 2019. I have a friend in Taiwan who organized this event. It was FTX was nothing by then. Nobody knows who they are, but my friend who has organized this event in Taipei, they invited lots and lots of the people from the industry, and FTX made its maiden show, I guess, in this conference. And lots of people start to know, what the exchange is, and so on and so forth. So we especially during 2 years of pandemic, we see lots of growth on the company itself. Yeah.
Right. And we can see the way it achieved that growth. We can see now that it was doing dodgy deep business practices. It was over leveraged. How would you say, how did it achieve this fast business growth? How come it grew so fast?
So according to an article, it has a really good summarization on how they made money. It's called the flying wheel scheme. So what they did is they created a token, they pumped the token price, they marked gains to the balance sheet, they marked the pumping the price as gains in the balance sheet, they show these gains to the investors, and then they raise cash enough through equity sales for loans and pump another token again.
Yeah, right. So I mean, they created their own token, the FTX token. Yeah. Which they held a large sum of, and they said, so they most of it was not on the market, but some of it was sold at, let's say, whatever it was, $20 or $30.
Yep.
And so they held billions of that token, and they used that as kind of an asset. But obviously, it was a fake asset. And tell me if you agree with me, but it was a fake asset, because if it was a token that had no really intrinsic value, it wasn't Bitcoin. It was
FTT just token. Has very interesting tokenomics. So it's like a structured share product. It's like a structured share product. The owners of the FTT token does not own the equity share of FTX, but the token owners are entitled to to have some kind of a dividend into the token itself, and also the token owners get a discount on the commission fee when they trade on FTX. And so and also what FTX does is that it uses a 30%, I think it's 30%, I did some research, a daily 30% of the revenue on the exchange to buy back those FTT tokens and burn them. So that's how it works. But it's a very unusual type of share. You can get trading discount. It's basically a securitized revenue sharing agreement. You know, they create a lot of these, and I think it worked fine before the bank run, basically. And they used FTT tokens as collateral to loan out to borrow out a lot of US dollars. But
they used it as collateral. Yeah. They put it on the books as an asset.
Yeah.
But it was essentially a make-belief asset, because in any real situation, if they were forced to sell that asset, they wouldn't get the value of it that was on their books, because the actual act of selling would collapse the price of that token. So even though they would have said on the balance on the books that they have, you know, assets of, you know, whatever it was, billions of dollars of a token, it was make-believe. But they used that asset to take up loans, to get investments, and fund their operations.
Yeah, it's a confidence game they're playing. So when everything is going up, the FTT token, well, on the book or in the vast majority of the user's mind worth some money, but when everything is going down, the value goes to zero very, very fast. Yeah. So right. I want to mention that the event that triggered the whole bank run was a tweet from CZ, Binance CZ. He said that as a part of the Binance exit from FTX equity, Binance received roughly $1.2 billion equivalent in BUSD and FTT. BUSD is a stable coin on Binance chain. So it's backed and also collateralized by an external firm. But FTT, we have no idea how the percentage in those $1.2 billion. So that's a huge amount of token, right?
Yeah.
And CZ is declaring that he is going to liquidate all the FTT they have on Binance. And they are doing it in a way they're trying their best not to impact the market as much as possible. So this tweet triggered a huge bank run on the FTT. People start to shorting FTT token, and also people start to withdraw assets from FTX exchange. Yeah.
Right. So, and for those who don't know, CZ is the CEO of Binance, which is the biggest crypto exchange in the world. Yeah, so CZ, they announced they're going to sell, they held some of that token. And the reason they held it, because they were an original investor in FTX. So because of that, they held some of that FTX token. They announced they were going to sell it, and that started collapsing the value of FTX token. So it caused the collapse of FTX and Alameda. So Alameda is the sister company of FTX. And from what I've been hearing is FTX, so there's Alameda Research, which was actually the investment arm of the kind of company headed by Caroline. But they're owned by SBF. Everything was owned and then by SBF. But apparently FTX was using customer deposits and using them to fund various activities, including sending that money to prop up Alameda. Is my understanding correct?
I think there are two facts. First, the FTT tokens are owned by Alameda Research. It's not owned by the exchange. So basically, the FTT tokens that were issued were Alameda Research, and they has been and also burned in Alameda Research. What FTX had was basically a loan. They borrowed FTT from Alameda Research. So what happened was that the first Alameda Research already has almost got bankrupt in June this year because something related to the Luna event. We don't know exactly what happened because things are still unfolding. And essentially what happened with FTX is that to save Alameda Research from going bankrupt, FTX loaned back lots of FTT tokens to Alameda Research. And essentially part of that is customer funds.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I mean, that's obviously very bad practice. And it shows you shouldn't keep your money on exchange because you never know what they're going to do with that. But we'll talk about more about that later. And since then, there's been some other events. Apparently, I mean, the story is still very much developing, but apparently FTX just recently, a few days ago, it's been hacked and money... it had some assets. Obviously, it didn't have enough to pay off all its debt, but it did have some assets. But some of its assets now apparently got hacked. Do you know anything about that?
There are lots of stories about it. Because I had some connections with various other trading firms in the ecosystem. It's not talked about between me and some of my friends within those firms. Allegedly, it could be a misinformation or people just have no idea what happened. It's FUD. It could be FUD because per my understanding is that when FTX filed Chapter 11. A bankruptcy procedure, SBF already stepped down and he has no control of the company anymore. And a new CEO has been appointed. And this guy, as a reference, this guy used to handle the Enron bankruptcy procedure. And so he knows what to do. He knows what is going on. And it's in my opinion, it's hard to imagine that in that kind of circumstances, that someone is going to, someone hacked, even if someone hacked into it, even if someone put a backdoor, a malware, as allegedly onto the application, or someone put a Trojan horse on the homepage of FTX, as it said in the rumors, I think even if someone did that, it's probably going to be an inside job. But, there's nothing we cannot confirm what's really happened. And I haven't seen anything on Twitter, people saying that their funds has been lost or whatever. It's just that FTX stopped withdrawing, and mostly people are focusing on how to get their money back. And in that case, lots of people, lots of my friends, some of them in Singapore, some of them in Hong Kong, they're planning to buy a plane ticket to fly to the Bahamas right now to meet in person what is going on, because, you know.
To get the money back, come armed with a hammer, come knocking at SBF's house and get their money back.
Yeah, we have not, because you know, it's they're still there, right? And it's not in the United States, it's not somewhere in Singapore, but you know, there's very less information except for, you know, ex-FTX employees or you know, SBF himself. People are trying to find out what's going on there, right?
Yeah. Right. So what do you think people at home, you know, they might be holding some Bitcoin and they're a bit worried. They're worried, what does this mean? Like, what do you think are the implications of this for Bitcoin? Should people be worried or not?
The ironic thing about this event is that Bitcoin is all about removing the trusted third party. And yet we are here, we're sitting here discussing about an event that's highly involved in a trusted third party, which is FTX. The nature of, if everyone is a true believer of what has a thorough understanding, I don't ask people to believe in Bitcoin. I just, if anyone who's holding Bitcoin has a thorough understanding of what true decentralization is, they wouldn't put their own money on an exchange for too long. So people who are holding Bitcoins, it's been said for many times. I think it has also been an alert somewhere on, I think, on Bitfinex or Kraken's website. Kraken or some other exchanges websites, do not, one of the big principles is that do not use an exchange as your wallet, because it's very understandable that if you put your Bitcoin, park your Bitcoin on exchange, you can sell it or buy it anytime. It's very liquid, but you also bear the third party, the counterparty risk of losing them all, because you know, however much those exchanges are regulated, however many insurance companies are behind all these, you know, however good the picture looks on their company vault or bank vault, whatever, there's always a risk of losing the third party losing this your Bitcoin, right? So I think it's a very important lesson that people understand that not your key, not your Bitcoin.
Yeah, I completely agree. It really underscores that point that people need to self-custody their Bitcoin in secure storage. This shows and this demonstrates that. And it's something I've been saying, and we've been encouraging our customers to do at Hardblock, and most of our customers do that. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I encounter a lot of people who frankly didn't listen to me over the past year, and they had this belief that, oh, you know, if I hold it at a big exchange, my coins will be safe. And it's not like that, and they're not safe for many reasons, because there's many things that could happen to an exchange. An exchange could be doing dodgy stuff with your funds.
Yes,
because there's always competitive pressure. So when they've got a lot of money that they're holding customers' funds, there's the pressure to use those funds to try and get a higher return. So if that's one thing they could be doing. They could have bad security practices. Mm-hmm. They could be an inside job. They could just somebody. So many times where people inside the company stole the customers' funds. Mm-hmm. And also, when you're actually storing it on an exchange, it's not just the exchange security, but your own personal security, because your own personal account and an exchange could be hacked. Mm-hmm. So if you have good, secure storage, which you custody, You have none of those risks. And that is the whole point of Bitcoin, because this kind of shenanigans and this kind of dodgy practices can only happen when you give your Bitcoins to somebody else. But Bitcoin allows you to own it. And if you own Bitcoin in your own custodial wallet, what I recommend is a hardware wallet, then you're safe. Nothing really can happen to you. It doesn't matter what weird practices SBF or anybody else does. You have your Bitcoins. Nobody can touch them. And you don't care.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I think, tell me if you agree with me with this, but I think it really, like these events and this and the, some of the other bankruptcies, and there'll probably be other ones going forward, other shit coins, frankly, will go to zero. A few of them have, but others will over the next year. And really underscores also the message that I and other Bitcoin maximalists have been saying, to really stay away from that, because people get fooled. They go for these shiny objects, they try to trade when they have no experience in trading. They try to invest in these schemes to get a return, like Cows, Celsius, and things like that. And I mean, do you agree with me that people, like a lot of these coins don't have value and people lose money with that, like FTX token, what is it? Like none of this stuff, it just comes. You can't believe people who sell them, invest in Bitcoin.
People are easily deceived in the crypto space. You know, let's take Solana as an example, right? So Solana is a blockchain that's invested mainly by FTX. So they created a whole project. And I have no idea whether you heard of it, but there's also wrapped Bitcoin on Solana. So basically you can transfer your Bitcoin into a custody and then the balance appears on your Solana blockchain account. So people assume that the wrapped Bitcoin works like wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum or wrapped Bitcoin on, for example, Liquid blockchain, right? Liquid blockchain or elements that those side chains, some of those side chains use a atomic swap technology. So basically it's a trustless setup. But on Solana, on the website, no one tells you whether the wrapped Bitcoin on Solana is swapped with trustless technology, or is it just a centralized wallet from a trusted third party, for example, FTX, that you transfer in and then just basically top up your balance on your Solana blockchain. So it's basically really hard for average daily investors to look into the source code of Solana itself and see, whether it's good or not. It's just marketing, right? If you go to Solana's website, it's you're gonna see like Solana blockchain super fast. It process, you know, literally like thousands of transactions per second, and you can see like the so-called decentralized exchanges operating on Solana, where you can have a ticking order book, which looks fantastic. But if you dig deep enough, you're gonna see that some of these good things, good features, is true. But fundamentally speaking, Solana, the liquidity and also like the custody of wrapped bitcoins is not trustless. It's still a business model that's heavily relying on trusted third parties, which is quite different from what Bitcoin or we maxis advertised. So what can we do about it? In last year, in 2021, when Solana first came out, lots of people just got crazy about it. And some of the engineers in crypto space told me, hey, this is like a gift from God. And people imagine like this DAX and trustless atomic order book trading happening on Solana, but it is what we wanted. But is it true? Is it fundamentally true that what they claim they are? I don't think so. So it's always important to do your own due diligence about where you put your money in to, right? So I assume most of the average daily investors wouldn't be able to do that. For sure, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I come up with the term Ponzi 2.0. It's, a lot of these schemes are basically Ponzi 2.0, the Ponzi schemes, but on a blockchain. And I mean, that's what most of the altcoin space is. It's Ponzi schemes on a blockchain. And yeah, I advise people to stay away from it.
Yeah. So the it's lots of people seeking for yield, and I think there are some yields that is true. Like you can borrow, you can lend your Bitcoin, or you can lend USD. The natural lending rate for USD on the market is more than 10%. Why? Because naturally, if let's say if most investors are like us, whenever we had more cash, we want to buy more Bitcoins, and to persuade us not to use those cash to buy Bitcoin, people has to pay interest to us. So that's where the yield come from. But it only works on Bitcoin, USD Bitcoin trading pair, right? But it doesn't work on any other cryptocurrencies, any other like shitcoin tokens.
Right, and it also puts your Bitcoin at risk, because if you're lending it,
yeah,
then you're not holding it, and then you don't know what's happening and if you're gonna get it back. So
again, that's right. Yeah.
It's not. I actually don't do it, and I don't advise people to do it.
Yeah.
In my experience, the people who've done the best is just who bought and held Bitcoin for a long time, and most of the people who try these other fancy things end up losing money, and then 3 or 4 years later some of them realize, oh, I should have just been holding Bitcoin, and if I held Bitcoin I would have been better off. But this is something that actually is somewhat upsetting, because some people who don't know better, we hear about this news about FTX, and FTX, it's an exchange that Bitcoin maxis have been warning people about not to use, and they've been warning people not to use that.
Mm-hmm.
But some people will hear about this and they'll be turned off from Bitcoin. They'll just lump Bitcoin together with this crypto Ponzi 2.0 schemes that are out there, and they'll be turned off by the whole spice, where instead, and some people will get the lessons, the correct lesson is to stay away from some of that rubbish and invest in Bitcoin, which is the most decentralized hard money that there is in the world right now. Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
With that?
It's a conflict between lots of legit venture capital funds are actually invested into the so-called Ponzi 2.0 schemes, and they have I think they have a different agenda. Either they want to, I don't think they only want to make quick money out of it. They also want to push their own agenda. As per my experience working at a major financial conglomerate in Japan, they have invested, for example, they have invested into Ripple, which is a shitcoin. You know, if you dig into the source code of XRP, it's totally shit. There's nothing you can learn from. And you can do all kinds of things, but mostly it's centralized. And when I was working there, I was always wondered why major banks and major major investing firms like Secura, they are, you know, they invest in scammers. Do they not know what they're doing or not? It appears to me that they have some of the advantages. First, if the scammers in the end were not caught bullshit, they gain some of the money. They might be able to go, for example, like 100x in a short period of time and exit safely. Secondly, there are other agendas they want to push. For example, like central bank digital currencies and stuff like that. So, and all these things are basically making our financial system globally more centralized than decentralized. And their only enemy, at the opposite, on the whole spectrum, is probably just Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. I'm afraid that some government regulators will be pushing, okay, Bitcoin and crypto is bad, invest in our central bank digital currencies, stay away from that, where that's the lessons they'll be trying to push, where in fact the lesson should be for people to hold and self-custody their Bitcoin and don't stay away from these shitcoin casinos. But thanks for explaining that, Yao. Is there anything, before we finish up, is there anything you think we missed we should touch on?
There is the whole FTX situation is still unfolding, but there's one thing I want to recommend. There's a recent interview with Adam Back, the CEO of Blockchain. So he has there's a video on YouTube. It's really worth watching, because he explains a lot of things in depth about the current unfolding situation at FTX, and lots of the suggestions he has is very, very valuable from a Bitcoin maximalist point of view. Yeah.
Okay. How do I find that video? I'm looking on YouTube now. Adam Back. What should I put in?
Just a Blockstream's official channel, and you're gonna be able to see it. This was uploaded yesterday. So okay.
I'll put in the show notes.
Yeah,
I think I can see it. Blockstream Talk 17 FTX lessons.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Adam Back is very knowledgeable. He was cited in the Bitcoin White Paper. So if he says anything, it's definitely worth a lesson. Thanks for recommending that, Yao. And how can we, if somebody wants to contact you, how can they find you?
I have a personal website. There are some of my contact details on that. It's ezawa.io, ezawa.io. That's my personal website, yeah.
I'll put that in the show notes also. Thanks for joining us and explaining what's happening here. Mm-hmm. And I will see you in the future, probably at the next Adelaide Bitcoin meetup.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.